of infinite land in the known sources. Once again, the absence of the chairperson of the committee, Honorable Sparsen. The committee has now got to elect an acting chairperson in terms of LGP Group 92, Section 1. I now put forth the question. Nominations for acting chairperson. Mr. Prince. Proposed. Second.
I second.
Seconded by Singh. Are there any further nominations? In the absence of any further nominations, I duly elect Mr. Hai as the acting chairperson of the session and hand over to Mr. Hai to proceed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable members and Secretary. Good morning, everybody. Let's start with the issue of the absence of the challenges. Something that we should have done it a long time ago. We normally in each select committee announce that is the book of speak for 8 weeks. But what we have failed to do was to ask the committee to send the messages of the speedy recovery. But also would like to extend that to the department if they could have liaise with the secretary to also send the messages of speedy recovery to him. If there is anything that the first department and the committee could, in addition to the messages, if they can maybe basket of fruit or things like those, free to do so. But within the legal framework, of course. So we wanted that to indicate that we are hopeful that in the next program, the first term program, we should be taking place around February or so. Actually, after the State of the Nation address, we'll be embarking on the program of the of Parliament, which includes the plenaries and the committees. We are hopeful that the first select committee in next year will be chairing. That's what they say to express our wishes as a select committee. We'll formally send him a note here. Let me formally open the meeting and welcome everybody and allow members to introduce themselves, the parliamentary staff, as well as and then allow the department to also introduce themselves. My name is Manda Isaac Hai. I am a member of the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources, which include the four departments, the Department of Environmental Affairs, the Department of Mineral Resources, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, as well as the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. So this committee constitutes of the four departments. We oversight those four departments. In addition to the four departments, we also oversight entities of the four departments. I am representing the Eastern Cape. I will allow honorable members to introduce themselves.
I am Gomi Singh, a member of this committee, representing the province of KwaZulu Natal.
I'm Ella Prince, I'm a member of the committee, and I'm from the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, my name is Bridget Massal,
Good morning, I'm Kathy Bastafi, and I'm representing the Western Cape.
Good morning, I'm Lennox Taylor, a member of the committee from Eastern Cape.
Good morning,
let's now ask the parliamentary staff to introduce yourself.
Sekulat, co-register, research for the committee.
Good morning, everybody. Arsha Bauer, committee secretary, thank you.
Good morning, Jason Perez, content advisor.
Good morning, Pam Atosa, in the office of the director general of the Naval Service.
Good morning, I'm Matilda Natago, executive secretary.
Continue with this direction.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Kumsa Mangwekia from the Department of Environmental Affairs, Biodiversity and Conservation.
Good morning, my name is Jumi Rantel. I'm from the Department of Mineral Resources in the branch of Mineral Regulation and Regulation.
Good morning, Hisham Abada. I'm the DDG for Legal Authorizations, Compliance and Enforcement.
Good morning, my name is Samuel Marshall. I'm from the Department of Mineral Resources, Mineral and Mineral Regulation.
Good morning, my name is Marco Smith. I'm from the German Consulate General of the
Good morning, members. I'm Tabel Sahedo from the Department of Mineral Resources and the Mineral Resources Ministry. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and other members. My name is Alfred. I'm DCG for Environmental Advisory Services in the Department of Environment.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members and colleagues. My name is Fulisid Mkitina, an outgoing DTG for Biodiversity and Conservation from the Department of Environment.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members. My name is Judy Beaumont. I'm DG responsible for climate change and air quality management in the Department of Environment.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Lisa McCord. I'm Chief Operating Officer of the Department of Environmental Services.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Guy Craig from Environmental Programs and Environmental Affairs.
Good morning, Rula Monaghan, Executive.
Everybody, good morning. My name is Mulilani from NHC.
Record.
Good morning, I'm Chantal Harber, I'm from Anglo American.
Good morning, my name is Inga, I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Good morning, my name is Jason Yarsel, I'm the member of Parliament and the member of ANC and the permanent observer of this committee.
Good morning, good evening,
Spencer.
I'm
Honorable members, department. What we are going to do now, we are going to first start with the adoption of the minutes, and thereafter we will allow both departments to make do their presentation, because the issues that they will be dealing with are interrelated. Then honorable members will then ask questions to both departments. But pray with the acting DG for DMR as well as the DG for environmental affairs. That is the approach that will be embarking upon. So for now, we start with the adoption of minutes. Member, can we? You have the minutes in front of you. Can we go to first page? Any questions or commissions? Yeah, the 18th November. Last week, yes. Page one. page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, and page 6, the last page. Can we have a move on in the second half, the option of minutes, honorable colleagues? Any second? Honorable Franco, thank you. The program for the outside business, I think that should deal with it after the presentation, after the report that was submitted to all of us. Can I, at this stage, then allow the
Not for the data. Just on the minutes, we requested the documents on the outstanding land team. Are they just okay? Thank you.
Can we ask him again to make a presentation? That's all on there. Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah. Sorry. The from the Department of Environmental Affairs, the Minister and Deputy Minister, I apologize. From GMR, the Minister, Deputy Minister, and the DG also apologize. So from GMR, we have the acting DG will be making the presentation. But also from honorable members, we receive apologies from honorable Haki and the honorable Smith, as well as the honorable Makepa. Those are the honorable members who are unable to join us. Sorry for the team that said facts. Can we then ask the acting DG to say us through the presentation?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Good morning once again. I will be taking Honorable Members through the presentation on mining and prospecting activities in sensitive habitats, which cover grasslands, wetlands, and watersheds in the coal mining regions of South Africa. The presentation layout first that is the legal framework for conservation of protected areas, and which cover the areas that I've highlighted. We will also outline the process that we follow in processing applications in the area, and also outline the types of applications that we have, as well as rights in the sensitive area. We'll also outline the governance structures that are in place to facilitate the management of mining in sensitive areas between our department as well as the Department of Environmental Affairs, and also provide a progress report on shale gas exploration permits as expected, and make conclusion remarks. In terms of the legal framework, obviously augmenting what is contained in the NPRDA 2008 has as one of its objects protection of the environment. Section 10 of the NDRDA provides for protection to be lodged or received from interested and affected parties against the granting of any application or right. And this covers consultation or what is normally referred to as public participation, in covering the environmental management plans and programs, etc. Section 48 of the NPRDA stipulates restriction or prohibition on prospecting mining on certain lands, which should include national parks and other sensitive areas, as will be outlined in the complementary presentation by colleagues from environmental affairs. And Section 96 of the NPRDA provides for appeals to be lodged against administrative decisions that might have an adverse impact to any interest and affected parties. Further to that, in terms of Section 49 of the NPRDA, the Minister of Mineral Resources has the power to prohibit or restrict protecting or mining. So the issue of the gazette that will then include loading of applications and or protecting or mining on the said or identified areas. Protected areas provide a wide range of social, environmental, and economic basis to people and communities welcome. They are a tried and tested approach that has been applied for centuries to conserve nature and associated cultural resources by local communities, indigenous people, governments, and other organizations. With regard to the use of sensitive habitats, where coal mining taking place in South Africa, just giving a helicopter view of the country in respect of KwaZulu-Natal, the issues like they are around natural forest and rural community and the in respect of the areas that they haven't any application. In housing, the issues largely around the problem of heritage sites and the no coal applications around heritage sites. Our community contains natural around the Vaal River emanating from coal applications that have been lodged and either possible or being considered. In the Free State, there is a World Heritage Site called Freeport Dome. And the Cotton Border and Housing, there are also community concerns emanating from coal applications that have been lodged along the Vaal River. Next slide. With regard to Mpumalanga, the our wetlands and protected areas, and this cover Christmas Mere, Bagger's Kurong, and the protected areas in the Castle Gulf, Kwamandanga, DC, and Ndawe, Trust, Sugarland, Mabola. And in Limpopo, low north wetlands, the cultural and heritage issues covering Mpumalanga, Mapungubwe, my apologies, which is a cultural or heritage archaeological site, and in respect of the core, there are no rights in the core, in the property. In respect of the process that is followed in processing application, after an application is accepted, lodged in terms of the MCRK, such an application is made known, and the public is invited to comment and object, and what you refer to as Section 10 is public. Such an applicant, after it being accepted, is in process in the accepted letter, consults with interested and affected parties. An applicant is further instructed to consult as part of public participation process with interested and affected parties on the environmental plan, to set of the prospecting rights, and the environmental program of the mining rights. The submitted EMC is then submitted for consultation with relevant state departments, including Department of Environmental Affairs, Department of Water and Sanitation, and instead of implementing the MCTA, etc. And State Department, we need to highlight, also serve on a secretary structure called MDES, which is constituted to handle all objections, including those on environmental management issues. In instances where there are no objections, or these are particularly addressed, applications are processed further, either refusal or granted, depending on the case of the system. With regard to applications and rights, in sensitive areas within Mpumalanga, here we just focus on Mpumalanga, the total number of 220 applications that have been received in protected areas. This number is a combination of both prospecting and mine rights. And in terms of the breakdown, we have 64 of these applications that were rejected, 26 were accepted, which means they are still in a processing or application phase. 56 were refused, which means the files are closed because they send the application. 57 have lapsed, and 7 are pending acceptance and rejection, which is the third phase of processing of an application after it has been lost. It's also important to highlight that out of all of these, all self-rights were granted in 8 issues. The MCRDA require processing of applications for their own merits and legally found decisions are taken in the process. With regard to the government mechanism to facilitate the management of mining in sensitive areas between our departments, it is the important to highlight that part of improved data coordination regulation of the environment for mineral resources in South Africa, a new system has been developed and implemented through National Environmental Management at NEMA. And to give impact to the implementation of the new system, a committee was constituted comprising our three departments, which you refer to as the Interdepartmental Project Implementation Committee, short IPIC, which had the key task team. What is important to highlight is the critical task team that is key to the governance mechanism, which is called the Joint Planning Task Team, with the responsibility for coordination of government intentions to declare areas considered to be environmental sensitive and coordinate data application as well as restrict money on such sensitive areas. The second bit was coordinate also our department as well as the Department of Environmental Affairs, and also we serve jointly and attend World Heritage Committee meetings, something that used not to be the case in the past. And thirdly, we jointly developed the mining and biodiversity guideline on mining, which will contribute to the protection of important biodiversity and water resources. And the exchange of database and information on such licensing system and summary for purpose of better coordination on informing cultural training and government dissemination on metal related mining and minerals. And another input critical in improving governance was the streamlining of legislation for the regulation of the one environment, with GMR implementing NEMA and the Minister of Environmental Affairs, the field authority on environmental authority. Now, the joint planning task team that I referred to, which is one of the task teams of the IPAC, has shared special information on protected areas and expansion plans with the GMR. And in the past 3 weeks, the Department of Environmental Affairs finalized the verification of the special data set of protected areas and shared it with the Department of Mineral Resources. GMR is in the process of loading this special data on the SAMRAC system, and to which will enable the automatic prevention of logging of applications in verified protected areas. And regarding biodiversity data, the functional specification to link Department of Environmental Affairs as well as Department of Mineral Resources system has been completed. The NESA budget funding to provide for the technical work to physically make DS biodiversity information accessible to GMR is a matter that remains outstanding and it works on. Once this is in place, biodiversity information provided by applicants can be verified regarding better decision making. In respect of shale gas exploration permits, further to the presentation that was given to honorable members at the committee meeting on the 28th of October 2014, we just want to report that an interministerial committee meeting has been arranged to discuss shale gas issues, where among others the way forward will be discussed. In fact, it is planned for sometime before the end of this year. And once there are developments arising out of that committee meeting, the honorable members and the committee will be placed accordingly. GMR remains committed to the protection of the environment and will continue working with other government departments to preserve the environment. And the one last point I just need to also highlight is just to reassure honorable members that the GMR remains committed to implementing the one environment in the coming year. Thank you.
The Kyoto Protocol is discussed start the presentation on the brief, on the current and projected demand of grasslands and wetlands and water says, but also the expected impact of the CGS exploration. We will still go to respond to this issue of the progress report on the CGS exploration plan, because the atlas is not talking to what we agreed on in the last meeting where you were presenting this issue. So the issue of coordination by the interministerial committee is not really addressing the issue that we highlighted in the last meeting with regards to the issue of them. So the coordination, I think, just this is a ministerial committee doesn't stop us knowing the developments with regard to the issues of the permits. But when we address it, I think you should also respond to that as well. Can we allow them the to make the
thank you, Chair. Our proposition has been made by two presenters, Kumpam and Moika and Kumpam. Kumpam, can I hand over to you?
Thank you, Chair. My presentation is going to cover the current and projected mining impact on sensitive ecosystems, in particular grasslands, wetlands, and watersheds. Thus, to start by indicating the critical role that is played by mining in terms of the country's economy, including job creation and the GDP. And our observation is that on par with the mineral wealth that the country has, we also have an exceptional endowment of biodiversity and ecosystems. Hence, South Africa is considered as a mega diverse country, and it's number three after Brazil and Indonesia. So the challenge is now balancing the interests of conservation against those of development. The mining and biodiversity sectors therefore have a very different goals and money, both in terms of conservation as well as development, which are both respected by the constitution. And in terms of impact, as most of us know, open cut mining has substantial impact on biodiversity, especially at the mine sites themselves, causing both compositional as well as structural changes in terms of the vegetation. And we also encounter both direct as well as indirect impact of mining on biodiversity as a result of vegetation clearance, for example, exploration, drilling, as well as habitat fragmentation. There are also off-site impacts resulting from obstruction as well as acidification of water, and these occur in a broader area, including outside of the mine site. And there's also hydrological impacts that impact on the functioning of important wetlands, important ecosystems such as wetlands and grasslands. And there's also issues around acid mine drainage, which threaten water resources, human health, as well as food security. And some of the emissions from these mining activities also lead to climate change related indicators. And these become more pronounced once you have many mining activities occurring in a single area. In terms of the grassland biome, this is a very critical component in terms of our biodiversity, because it covers, our grasslands cover about 6% of the current land surface, and they are rich storage areas for our biodiversity, and they are of global significance. And if you look at the entire grassland biome itself, it covers about 60% of South African commercial crops, 50% of African croplands, so it's a very important ecosystem for us. However, 40% of the grassland biome has been irreversibly modified, with 50% of this remaining. Hence, it's important that we conserve. And unfortunately, for now, only 3% of it is currently protected through legally protected areas. We have quite a number of minerals which are being prospected and mined in our grasslands, including gold, diamond, and uranium. However, the most critical of this is coal, which is the most significant type of mining occurring in the grassland biome. And we have been, I think as indicated by the colleagues from GMR, we have been really working in partnership with the Department of Mineral Resources through the South African Mining and Biodiversity Forum, which brings together the people from the conservation sector as well as the mining companies and the Department of Mineral Resources. That map indicates the key grassland biomes in the country, which are more towards the eastern side of the country. I'll come back later to analysis and studies that have been conducted in terms of prioritizing some of these grassland areas for protection. That next slide is a map indicating biodiversity protection priority areas, which are really sensitive to the impact of mining as categorized through those four categories. The dark bound are legally protected mining, which in terms of legislation in those areas, mining is prohibited. That is in terms of Section 48 of the Protected Areas Act. And then the lighter shade of that is areas of high biodiversity importance. And these areas are presenting the highest risk for mining, or these are critically endangered and endangered ecosystems, such as wetlands, freshwater ecosystems, and Ramsar sites, which are wetlands of international and global significance. And then the lighter shade is buffer zones. In some instances, we also have cross-border conservation areas with our neighboring countries. So those buffer zones are areas of high risk for mining. And the lighter areas are areas of moderate biodiversity importance. In most instances, we use those areas as priority areas for further expansion of the conservation estate. Just to mention that we are currently sitting at about 10.6% of protected areas in the country, covering the terrestrial environment. And in terms of internationally agreed targets, we should be sitting at 70% by 2020. So we are pursuing that expansion goal. Further, in terms of our cooperation with the Department of Mineral Resources, we have put together a guideline document, which is best practice, which is premised on global best practice. The mining and biodiversity guidelines, which were approved last year by the two ministers, and these guidelines really assist us in terms of agreeing as the two sectors in terms of which areas must be set aside because they are solar concerns, that we cannot avoid the country to mine in those areas. However, in other areas, there have been agreements through this guideline that we need to engage and ensure that we harmonize our planning system as indicated by the Department of Mineral Resources. We are also working on finalizing a wetland offset guideline for the wetland ecosystem. And these are being championed by the Department of Water Affairs, working with our department and Department of Mineral Resources. And that's just an indication that in terms of the water systems in the country, where we see a high impact is during active mining as well as post mining, and those impacts need to be mitigated. That is a map. We've done a lot of detailed biodiversity planning work in terms of identifying where our critical biodiversity hotspots and ecosystems are, and that's just one of the maps indicating the important wetland areas. This one, we've also done some detailed biodiversity planning, understanding, trying to understand where the freshwater ecosystem priority areas are in the country, even greater South Africa, the water sub-country. So these are maps that we consider jointly with the Department of Mineral Resources in terms of agreeing on which areas we need to protect and which areas we can agree on mining GDPs. And in terms of the priority biodiversity assets and the allocation of mining or prospecting rights, at a national level, those are the percentages in terms of the allocation of mining rights as well as prospecting rights. And the indication here is that, for example, we have significant areas where there's already prospecting rights allocated, both in terms of wetlands, grasslands, as well as other freshwater ecosystem areas. We were requested to also make a reflection in terms of the Mpumalanga province, which is one province where we have most mining prospecting licenses and issues and applications issues as indicated by the colleagues. Those are the percentages in terms of the entire provincial service which is under prospecting for mining. And this is just a slide indicating freshwater priority areas for Mpumalanga and other areas which are important for water conservation. I'm sure one can keep the slide of function of independent in terms of the projected impact. As I had indicated earlier, the only category of biodiversity conservation area where no mining is allowed is in respect of our protected areas, which are areas which are set aside for biodiversity conservation and are usually proclaimed as either national park nature reserves, marine protected areas, world heritage sites, and forest protected areas, and then management protected for reason. And then we have another more flexible category which is called protected environment, which in terms of that level of prioritization, we would then consider allowing mining to go ahead. However, under strict conditions that will ensure conservation and balance between conservation and development. We have worked tirelessly. I'm sure most of you would have heard of the concerns around the granting of a mining license to an area 7 kilometers to the east of the Mapungubwe National Park, which is also a well heritage site and is also a harsh boundary protected area with Zimbabwe and Botswana. In trying to deal with that challenge, we have really worked hard in terms of undertaking detailed heritage impact assessments, which indicated that there will be no direct impact but indirect impact in terms of the cultural heritage in the area of that park. Mapungubwe is an area which we have used as a test case in this project arrangement in ourselves and in mineral resources. And we then, through those investigations, aim to understand that, for example, you've got a core area of about 30,000 hectares, which is protected by a very huge buffer of 265,000 hectares. Hence, it was important for us to try and look at ways of reducing that buffer zone, which was approved in June by the World Heritage Committee. Of course, conservation of all World Heritage sites is also governed by the UNESCO World Heritage Convention. And that's one area where we have really worked together, taking our colleagues from the MR into those meetings at the global level for them to try and understand the concerns of the global view. So we have now everything on earth. The reduced buffer zone has been approved. What we then agreed upon is that in the reduced buffer, we need to agree on condition of mining. And I understand that the DMR needs to help us get that condition. That's the information. I'm sure those are the grassland priority areas, the top circle indicates our grassland priority areas, which occur throughout Mpumalanga, Free State, Gauteng, and KZN. Apologies, I think the site is a bit fuzzy, but the indication that there's a lot of mining and prospecting licenses issued, which coincide with that with those grasslands. And the central circle is the northeastern Cape grasslands around the Aluan area. There are no current mining licenses issued for that area, and the bottom one is Kantobo Mountain area in Eastern Cape, where only a few licenses have been issued, and as I indicated, with the process which is currently in place, we are working hand in hand with CMR to ensure that there will be minimal impact where a mining license has to be issued. I think we can skip the slide and the last slide. I think we spoke to the Mine Planning Subcommittee, which is in place, which is the planning horizon for the two departments. And we are now also looking at new tools such as the biodiversity office, which has been emerged with the hope of trying to balance biodiversity and development interests. And we've completed mining guidelines, but these are now currently implementing them. And this guideline enables the regulator. Apologies, this slide was added at the last minute after we got the brief yesterday night, and we started to look at those issues as well. And the guideline actually provides guidance on where mining-related activities are prohibited, and as I indicated earlier, we use Masongo as a test case in reducing the size of the problem. Thank you.
I'm just going to focus down on the questions that you want the committee to raise around shale gas exploration. And I'm going to be very quick because in some respects my colleague from EMR has already covered some of the legal aspects around this. Just to reiterate that in terms of both the NPRDA, Section 48 and 49, the National Environmental Management Protected Areas Act, also provides for the provision of mining-related activities in protected areas in its Section 48. Mining activities, in addition to that, mining activities have been included in listed activities in the Environmental Impact Assessment Regulations, since these have been identified as having potential to impact on the environment. So in short, shale gas exploration applications would be subject to the environmental authorization in terms of the National Environmental Management Act. And as part of the requirements for an environmental authorization, an assessment will need to be done which would identify expected or potential environmental impacts as well as proposed mitigation measures. As my colleague from DMR outlined, the one environment system which has been incorporated would be implemented from the 8th of December 2014. All exploration activities, including the Chagas exploration activities after the 8th of December, would be subject to the National Environmental Management Act environmental authorization requirements. The exploration activities listed in the EIA regulations have been extracted and submitted as part of the packet of documents to the committee. So I'm not going to go through all of those. In addition to this, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, what we are doing in conjunction with the Department of Water and Sanitation and the provinces which are impacted by shale gas exploration is we've initiated a strategic environmental assessment, which is in essence a planning intervention. The strategic environmental assessment provides an information base for planning decision making, which aims to identify areas that would be sensitive to shale gas exploration, and then to identify management measures which should apply to shale gas exploration and production in these areas. So this is the initial work. These are the areas which have been identified, and I'm going to ask Kumsa if you go to the next slide. I'm just going to ask Kumsa to cover the initial work that is going on the biodiversity sensitivities within the shale gas exploration areas under the strategic environmental assessment.
There are several protected areas that are potentially prone to impact from shale gas exploration, and these include the Kalahari Hunt on top, and the mid one is Lugala National Park in the right case, and the Golden Gate National Park to the right in the Free State, and quite a number of protected areas, including Tankwa, Karu, Kamjibu, and all these that are spread in the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape. And I think the next map led into the location of those national parks, which is the green blob on the map. Thank you.
Okay, just to note that there is another presentation which actually gives some further detail, but part of the strategic environmental assessment also covers the SKA sensitivities and overlap with the SKA. So that the strategic environmental assessment is taking all layers of information, including the square kilometer array sensitivities, the biodiversity sensitivities, in order to formulate the measures, management measures that at a planning stage we are recommending. But that work is ongoing and not yet complete. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for the presentation. Are you following the...
No.
Oh, okay. Can I allow honorable members to ask questions to all the presentations? The department will note all the questions and they will respond. And what I want also to indicate is that the department might note the question around because we will also expect written responses to the questions. We will respond verbally, but we would expect also in writing that you respond to the question. So that's why we request that you note them properly. And if there is a, you should also expect the follow-up written questions. They may not necessarily be raised in the meeting, but it could be follow-up questions. But we would expect responses in writing by next Friday to all the questions. There was this issue that I raised with the DMR that in the last meeting where you were making a presentation on the issue of the pay test, we had indicated that we would, in this meeting of the 23rd, expect an update with regards to the development. But I see that we do not have an update. They said that the ministerial committee that is dealing with all issues that are related to tracking that responded to us not satisfactory. Would expect you to, for the issue of the permit regulation, I don't think that's anything to do with how the department, the two departments, or any other department are coordinating their response on monitoring of tracking. So, make sure that when you respond, you also update us on the issue of regulations. Let me allow then the honourable member to raise questions. Honourable Z, honourable Prince, honourable Lapskafi. So far, we take this.
Thank you, Chair. On the first presentation, on page 7 of the presentation, in regards to public, is invited for comments and objections. Can the committee be privileged to get information of the kind of comments received during the public consultation and objections in order to see what kind of concerns are from the community itself that's been raised? If we can have that kind of list, it would be very helpful for the members of the committee. The second question I have is in regards to the shale gas, permits issued. In that case, is where the committee can be privileged to have the number of applicants that we received. And the committee can be kept informed in regards to the progress in that regard. The fourth one is a media report that I've been following in regards to the mining of shale gas, and after the completion of the mining and the miners have left these sites, there have been emissions in the atmosphere that affected the communities in the United States of America. We'd like to know if any research has been done from our side in that regard, because it's just a media report that I'm highlighting here, but I think we need to do some research in that. And the last question I have is, the companies that are interested in shale gas mining, are they forming any partnerships with local companies so that they could adhere to the kind of labor laws that affects this country if they are from other countries wanting to mine here? Thank you, Chair. That's about all the questions I have.
What some of these reason that those applications were rejected. And is it that it is mostly the small scale miners applications that are rejected? And the other question, just to link about the question that the member asked, is does the department have any program that is aimed to help small scale farmers, miners, to grow in the mining sector? Thank you. And then I think my last question will be, does the department have any research on how these kinds of projects in Mary Key display affecting the community around? So that we can know if we're going into the area, the Tarwa area is the place that I am coming from, and there is a lot of unemployment. And one would like to understand how the community will benefit out of this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Unfortunately, I have a lot of questions, if you bear with me. I think for me, first of all, is there's a few things here in this presentation, as we only get a cut of the bigger picture. That's very worrying, and at this stage it looks as if, and in the document it set out at various stages, that the grasslands are at this moment in this country the least protected area or ecosystem. And in spite of that, also that the grasslands, and if you look at them from a longer perspective, if the one province, and if you look at the Lake District, is a very important catchment area of fresh water in the country. Another thing that's worrying is that we all know that although it is right in legislation that replication should take place, but we know that even after the application, the quality for agriculture, for instance, of that area is reduced. The other thing that maybe not described in here, but I've done a little bit of reading, is that somebody in 2006 raised the concern on coal mining, not so much the bigger companies, I think of them all, yeah, but the smaller mining companies that are coming in as a method of mining, and at this stage the open class mining is not causing that lot of problems, and I will come back to that later on. I need to state that. And then the study of the Inkandala area, the grasslands, just to state the fact that grasslands are more in serious trouble, because most of these are targeted by mining licenses, and 25% of that area is targeted by mining companies for prospecting rock. But all these things, and then also the whole thing of the one environment approach, which I don't, it's not that I don't agree with that, that's not what I say, but some worrying fact about this is, brings me to the whole the few questions of, at this moment, it looks as if environment and mining is fighting for the same space. And then on top of that, we've got in from the environmental side to go to the protocols, and we are going to move with the amendment today. And in that protocol, South Africa agrees to decrease our dependence on fossil use and the impact of that. But in the same time, this committee is looking at applications for specifically coal mining
into sensitive areas. And all of this doesn't make sense to me, so I would like both departments to give this department, this committee, a sense of what is the guidelines, what are the policies, except for this legislative framework that is giving us now, that's supposed to stop on the 8th of December, what are the real practical guidelines and steps, how are you going to weigh these things with the Minister of Mining as the last person to decide after everything's been done, he's got the power now and he's had to say, I overrule all these things, or I take all these things into took all these things into consideration and I could apply, or I could say, let's go on. I would also like both departments to give this committee if it can't be today in future, but I would like to have an idea of this. On the short term and the medium term, analysis of financial benefits of coal mining in the further expansion of coal mining specifically into protected areas or sensitive areas in comparison with the job losses that it will create, say for instance in the Mpumalanga area that's highly agricultural driven, around about 3 billion rand, if mining is going to be allowed there, we have to, it's very often said in all these studies, is job creation and all these things. We all know that in this country we have to create grow the economy and we have to have jobs. But there are already existing activities with people who have jobs and the comparison between these two things. And then at the same time also to give this committee an idea of what are the from the Department of Mineral Affairs, what is your future picture of coal that we need in this country, and we really need for further exploration in coal, and what are the reasons, because that is one thing, and you have to think that for me to, or for this committee, to the Kyoto Protocol where we agree and say we will reduce it. Then I would also like to know on what are the arrangements that's been made by the Department of Mineral Resources to move in the transition to move from previous things that how it's been done previously to the implementation of the one environmental system. Somewhere in this document the map mentioned the mineral resource inspectors. I would like to know, are they already being appointed? Will the department appoint their own inspectors, or will they make use of the existing EMI inspectors that's been in the Department of Environmental Affairs? And if they're not appointed yet, when will they be appointed? When will they be trained and all that kind of thing? And then I would also go back to the shale gas and all these questions that I raised is also the coal and the shale. I would also like, I remember in the previous session I raised the question on the water resources and on the regulations that we dealt with, and the answer that I got back was the companies who's going to apply for the licenses for fracking will have to make that as part of their proposal and how they're going to use, that kind of water they're going to use, the source and so on. What has not been answered is what the wastewater disposal, say for instance fracking is going to be allowed, there's nothing in the regulations or very little in the regulations that makes mention of the wastewater and the disposal of thereof. Is the department going to have a certain unified unilateral regulations on what companies should do, or will companies be allowed to do as they please? Thank you.
How many inspectors have been trained? For in what training they will receive or completed by
by 8th of December. What kind of training? And how many? Thank you.
Another failure.
Thank you, Shepard. I would like to know how many education for students are there in the different teams and how many are approved and what is the involvement of the emerging sector and growth. Secondly, there's a coal mine in India.
I think on the issue of the shelters, what we need rather than specific issues, that the update on the development with regards to the issue of the shelters, we need to get the regulations, the permit, the process, before the regulations, whether things like a consultation, public participation, consultation, stakeholders, and also taking into account the issues that have been raised with regard to the project area. As remember, Mr. Masanja was referring to the area in the DMP, western side of the DMP, as we said, minimum impact. That for me was a concern, which did not impact at all. So that could also be addressed. I want to remember, because I'm not going to give another round now, so I want to ask all the questions that they have.
My first question has to do with the slide that talks to the Section 48, the National Environment Management Act, where the presentation was saying, it's talking about the two types of protected areas. And the second one was the one where no commercial prospecting or mining can happen in a protected environment without the permission from the Minister of Environmental Affairs. And I just want to know if this has actually happened, if there is an example of where the Minister, this could only happen because the Minister had given written permission, or if it has happened at all, and there is an example for that. And my second question has to do with asking both department if there is mining that has happened, mine operations that have taken place in Mpumalanga, where the miners or the companies that are mining have been investigated for having operated outside of the or in contravention of the legislation or regulations in the Mpumalanga area. And the third question has to do with the Mineral and Energy Department, if we could please be provided with a detailed account of the number of mining and prospecting license applications for Mpumalanga Goldfields. Thank you, Chair.
My last question would be, if the department could just give us some information, what is the kind of rehabilitation that's prescribed by the department in exploration of that current place in scope, for instance, the company decided not to go full scale or soft. Is there a kind of rehabilitation prescribed and what is the kind and what does it come?
On the issue of the one environmental system of mining license application, we understand that it is earmarked for the 8th of December. Can you just also update us on the process? Both by the DEA, in fact, the three departments that are involved, DEA, CMR, and the Saturday?
Compliance with the law, especially around environmental compliance,
it is non-negotiable. They are subject to the requirements of the very same nature, like any other. How many investors have been planned to take on and implement the one environment system? If the Honorable Chief of Alarm that to deal with the other question, so come back to that and just give a comprehensive report. The other questions that we asked by, which we'll share with our colleagues from Environmental Affairs, asked by Honorable Labuskahne with regard to the one environment system, if Honorable Member would allow that, I deal with that when I give a comprehensive report with regard to the one environment system. And the other question that was asked by Honorable with regard to the status of the Eastern coal mine project in Fajeri, I go into the Eastern Cape. Currently, the mine is not operating. It has had some challenges internal to the company, which matters, some of which found their way to court of law. It is our hope that the company will find a solution so that money and Indian economic development in a responsible manner can resume in that area, because we agree with Honorable Member. There is a need for job creation and economic development, but also in a responsible manner, complying with laws of the land. The second question that was asked related to the health and safety of ex-mine workers. In our written submission, we'll then elaborate further on it, but there are initiatives that are currently being rolled out, working together with the Minister of Health, aimed at addressing the plight of ex-mine workers through the creation of one-stop shop to provide the ex-mine workers with the necessary assistance, including addressing some of the compensation issues. I am aware that the Eastern Cape is one such site on TASA aimed at providing such assistance. And there are others that are in the pipeline being rolled out across this hair county aimed at providing the necessary assistance. But no other report will provide all the other details on it. With regard to the question asked by Honorable Matango regarding cases where mines are suspected or are being investigated for having flouted the rules or the laws in Mala in particular. There are five cases of such that we are aware of that are being investigated because they are suspected of having flouted the rules. And those we are undertaking jointly with our colleagues from the Department of Environmental Affairs as well as the other Department of Water and Sanitation. The data or information on mine and prospecting light in women and coal fields will supply that information. And now, coming back to the question regarding the one environment. As we outlined earlier on in our joint presentation, this is what we consider to be an excellent model of the benefits associated with government departments working together in the national interest. Where, in this regard, the Department of Mineral Resources would be implementing the environmental chapter only in so far as it relates to money and profit. Where we are at the moment is that in anticipation of the system that will be coming into place on the 8th of December, our department increased the number of environmental practitioners from 69 to 104, and this was due to the from the 1st of February this year. And all the GMR personnel have undergone environmental impact assessment training, as well as training on waste management acts. Workshops on the change management have also been conducted in all our 9 regional offices. We have the regional offices in each and every province in the country. Safety personnel are currently undergoing Environmental Mineral Resource Inspector, like EMRI, EMRI training at the University of Pretoria. And this number is drawn from all the regions of the department across the country. The course will be completed on the 15th of January 2016. I also need to highlight that we currently have already EMI training personnel on the complement of the department, which we will use as a tool in the total complement of the department. There are necessary steps that have been taken to designate the official, because the main army has been delegated the project to appoint the EMRI, that is the Environmental Mineral Resource Inspector, in accordance with the applicable regulations, and that will be in place before the 8th of December. Further to that, funding has also been made available from National Treasury over the next 3 years, MTF, to aid the department in implementation of this crucial program. A enforcement and chief directorate, an enforcement and compliance chief directorate has also been put in place as a standalone unit, and this will be fully formalized and operationalized by the 8th of December 2014. The revision of the EIA regulations by the Department of Environmental Affairs are also would be in place by the 8th of December. And as a department, we work very, very hard and very close with the Department of Environmental Affairs as well as Water and Sanitation to ensure that all the necessary, nuts and bolts, or it could be like that, are in place, come the expected day. Joint enforcement activities continue as part of the leading up to that important milestone, continue to take place, and this will continue even post the 8th of December 2014. And in respect of matters that are currently being investigated and handled by the Department of Environmental Affairs, we have an agreement and arrangement in place to ensure that those continue to be finalized by the Department of Environmental Affairs. Also, in respect of new matters, we'll continue to work together to ensure that there is no gap or disadvantage for food access to our land. I would like to reassure honorable members that as a department, we will remain ready and to implement the system on the 8th of
December. This issue of the shelter, I thought you were going to update us then about the writing later.
I thought I was going to make a comprehensive
our last meeting for the year.
Okay, and I thought when the Honorable Chair gave us the daylight message, we would have done that.
He also responded by him, but we just want us to brief up now so that we are aware. Because you see, the thing is that also the 8th of December, that you raised in your presentation, that you'll be opening for the permits, but we're also not sure of the processes of consultation that has not yet been exhausted. We are concerned about that as well. So that's why we need this update on the development now.
Thank you, Honorable Member. This is with regard to the area. Firstly, the system for the one environment system for mining will also be applicable to share the application. So they're not going to be considered different or subjective to different, because the one environment system is applicable to both petroleum as well as mineral resources in the portfolio or ambit of that is covered in the APRC. Then the second part is related to progress with the permitting and then how far we are as a department with regard to the consultation with the community as part of the communication strategy. as well as the actual meeting itself. What I need to highlight firstly is with regard to the consultation with the affected communities. We're still on track to have our consultation with the communities during the month of December, as well as the January, as we indicated. Then with regard to the permitting itself, in terms of where we are, is the applications that were lodged at the time when we had the moratorium. So prior to when we had a moratorium, which was subject to the moratorium process, and in line with the requirements of imperatives in the NPRPA, those applicants will then be requested to have to update their necessary documents. But obviously, and the Honorable Chair would remember to appreciate that this being a process that we also had with other departments, mainly our colleagues from environmental affairs as well as water. I appreciate the sensitivity in the process. Care is being taken, and at the level of the agency, like outlined earlier on, they bring that appreciation to ensure that the necessary coordination does take place. Safe to say that even when applications are in process, the aspect related to hydraulic structure until the regulations are in place, not the one that would be considered at this stage. But if we were also to be allowed to, and appreciating what the chair said, that maybe we submit a written response even further to the area than the writing that the chair has indicated.
Thank you very much, sir. You see, the concern that was also raised in the meeting in October, particularly with regard to the involvement of the public. In terms of imposing the concept was the fact that the month or the period that you target by, which is December, January, last time we raised the concept that in the period of holiday, so during those public hearings that you have maybe have may not be well attended, and so people will have the opportunity to input or express their views with regard to the issue. So it's a concern that we think that the department did not take into account, because it's still insisting that the will take place during the month of December, January. It's still a concern, the part of the COVID. We don't want a situation where when you finalize it, you're being taken up to court that you're not properly consulted on the issue. So it's a concern. And it could give an impression that you received it through this month, and then you consulted when you know that there were not enough people attended those public hearings, there will be public hearings that you will be holding. So I think it's still a concern of the whole, which we raise in the previous major concern. Okay, once you wondering on that, can we ask then the Department of Environmental Affairs to respond to the question that we asked?
Thank you, Chair. I will start, and the DG and the colleague will also plug in some of the gaps. I will start with the question around the grassland. Is it true indeed that they are the least protected biome in South Africa? And as a result, we are looking, as I indicated on one of the maps, at the three priority areas for the northern circle. The affected provinces, the Mpumalanga State and the NCC, are already working at expanding those grassland areas to ensure that they form part of our protected area estate. The central service is where our department is currently working with the Eastern Cape province, including the provincial conservation authorities, Eastern Cape Park Authority, in terms of establishing a nature reserve, a grassland nature reserve in that area of the province. So we are indeed working hand in hand with the Eastern Cape province And the third priority area, which came out of the feasibility study, which was undertaken with our National Biodiversity Institute, is the area which is in between two of our national parks. So it's a priority for South African National Park, which is a national park agency. So indeed, there is focused attention in terms of expanding the grassland protected area to ensure adequate protection of the grassland bio. What was currently not covered in terms of the expansion strategy which we currently have are the freshwater priority areas. Now, with the information which has come out of the freshwater ecosystem prioritization, we will be undertaking a process of reviewing our national strategy for protected areas to make sure that we adequately conserve our wetlands and resources. The second question was around, or a comment around the fact that it still exists mining and an environment fighting for the same space. Indeed, that is true. And the call for that is that wherever you find rich mineral deposits, you are guaranteed to get biodiversity of importance, national or global importance. So it is therefore critical in the department that we need to look at the delicate balance between conservation and development, especially given the fact that South Africa is a developing country indeed. So for us, conservation and development are two sides of at the same point. And as such, whenever there is mining a proposal, we look at a mitigation hierarchy and ensure that we firstly try to avoid impact, we try to minimize if we cannot avoid. We ensure that we rehabilitate all the areas which are affected, and the last resort is then by the diversity of the arrangement. And hence, as part of the guideline, the mining and biodiversity guideline, we are looking together with the Department of Mineral Resources and ensuring that the spaces which are just sacrosanct, where no mining must happen. And we have a categorization process, and we sit down and agree where mining must happen. And we use that hierarchy, the mitigation hierarchy, in also deciding where and how mining must happen. And there are principles that underpin that guideline that relate to the fact that we need to respect the rule of law and apply the law. We use best available diversity information, we engage stakeholders thoroughly, and we use best practice in terms of the EIA processes, and we ensure effective implementation of the environmental management and plan and program. And ensure adaptive management. I think the last question I would deal with was the question around the examples of previous areas where we have been working with DMRs. For example, in the Wild Coast area, the mining in that Kololeni area, which is the northern part of the Wild Coast area, could not be approved because of biodiversity sensitivity. The same applies in the Ismangaliso area, Richards Bay, 3 years ago. In the Rochester as well, although a mining license was issued in a protected area and a well-trafficked site, unfortunately, probably because of lack of information, but that mining license had to be withdrawn by the minister, the then minister of mineral resources. In the, I think Mapungubwe is a success story. We are currently in terms of the protected environment category of protected areas. Currently working with the Department of Mineral Resources and some of the mining companies in the Mpumalanga area, Kwamandla, Zambezi, Mabola, and Sesotho areas. Because those are legally protected environments. So we are currently working together as the two departments in terms of setting the conditions for mining for those areas. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Another question on this area that the permit has been reduced because of safety reasons. Have you ensured that there are no illegal mining activities in those areas? Indicating that there are areas like Kolobeni, Mambani, so where permits were either withdrawn or declined. My question is, what happened in situation where in those areas illegal mining activities then take place as a result of the refusal to grant permits? How do you then ensure that no illegal activities take place in those areas? Could have been expectations by the community that because there was mining and the development of the source trade, and now the Department of Environmental Affairs say no, this is a protected area. How do you ensure that the people who have been expecting that there will be no places, then they just conducting illegal mining activities in those areas?
Chair, from an environmental perspective, if there are activities or littered activities that are taking place in relation to that mine, the Department of Environmental Affairs would then be able to step in and then take action, enforcement action, to prevent those littered activities from actually taking place. And in terms of that, there are several things that we can do in terms of stopping the illegal activity. And we start off obviously with administrative action, where we issue a compliance or pre-compliance notice. Subsequently, we then give them a compliance notice, and if we still don't have any success with the administrative action, we then move on to a criminal prosecution. So that would, but that would at this stage only in relation to environmental contravention, shall we say. DMR, in terms of their act, I'm sure my colleagues on DMR will be able to expand on it, will also be able to take action in relation to illegal mining.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Illegal mining is illegal. And I think we need to be frank that where job creation is important, respect for law and order in the country must also count. And we need to encourage acts where communities, including those who may identify as criminal compliant and argue from the perspective of either potential for job creation and economic development and want to exploit. The stance that we're taking throughout is that where illegal mining, as my colleague was indicating for environmental affairs, is identified, it's a matter for the law. Obviously, from our perspective, we draw a very simple distinction. It's either you're a lawful right holder or not. There's no gray area insofar as the law is concerned. And working with our colleagues from environmental affairs, we necessarily then bring on board the law enforcement agencies. Hence, earlier on, I was indicating that we do engage in joint enforcement activities. And it's been very successful in that respect. I will cite examples of what we did in Limpopo and many other areas where we continue to join impact on activities to discourage and deal with legal mining. Because unless we act in concert in condemning and dealing with it, it will lead to some of the concerns honorable members raised around the compromise for biodiversity and protection. Thank you.
Can you share that conclude on that response to your question? In the wild coast particularly, because of the experiment, there was talking about Colombia and the wild coast area, there were initiatives that were embarked upon which were looking at how best to empower the community to achieve their equal policy initiatives. At the same time, yes, I think it is also did not succeed in establishing the national park that the training and the national department for the wild coast. However, the province has taken over the leadership of that program in order for us to establish a conservation area that is going to at least unlock the opportunities in the sector to the economy in that area. The way investment that we need in closer areas like in Kamaki, national investment, the role of robotics, they both in terms of upgrading the infrastructure as well as also working with the infrastructure.
there were programs that were identified that would at least grow the local economy for that I think the key is whether we are making progress in terms of what has been identified as the potential
Thank you very much,
Mr. Chief. My last question is actually on illegal and legal framework. As it happens, this one environmental, what do you call it, system. Will start on the 8th of December. How does the fact that the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Amendment Act is not an act yet affect the whole system? Because I understand it, that act should also be implemented for the system to work as a whole without gaps, without creating more problems. Now that is not an act yet, it's still going. And you're going forward. So I would like the Department of Mineral Resources as well as the Department of Environmental Affairs to tell this committee what is the risk in this going forward, while that act is not being active, so it can't be enforced, and how is these departments going to overcome those problems.
Can I have a response to that?
As we did outlined reported earlier on, we are cognizant of the concern raised by the Honorable Apostle. Listening to the status of the impact, however, from our perspective, in terms of the state of readiness and preparedness to implement the system, we are ready and we will continue with the implementation plan and getting everything in place to ensure that come the 8th of September we implement the one environment.
Well, I think this is a concern that there is no legal framework to proceed.
With all respect, this is not what I asked. I know that is what you're asking. I asked the department, what are the risks involved at this stage for going forward? There should be risk involved. The risk involved is that there's loopholes that can even create more damage than we have at the moment. So I would like the departments to be frank and honest and say these are the risks and this is what we're trying to do until that act is going to be promulgated, because this is why we want to move forward. And if the department thinks that there is no risk, then tell us that as well.
I first allow the leader to respond. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think on the one environmental management system, we are moving in terms of our preparations forward on the basis of a 8th December deadline. However, the fact of the matter is that the President has yet to assent to the NPRDA amendment bill. So the status as it currently stands, which relates your question, Chair, on our dates of the processes. The state is that the National Environmental Management Act amendments have been assented to, as has the Waste Act and the Water Act amendment. So, two acts have been attended to. In terms of all the subsidiary legislation, the regulations, all those regulations that are required in terms of the amendments are under preparation. The EIA regulations, for example, have been through public comment and are in the final stage of being adopted. Quite rightly, the provisions of the NPRDA Amendment Act, as they
engaging the one environment system, those provisions are quite important to repeal existing environmental management provisions within the NPRPA so that there's no confusion. However, both departments have taken an opinion from the state law advisor, and the state law advisor's opinion, maybe I can ask Ishan to help me with, I'm not really a legal expert, but my understanding is that the opinion is that in terms of Section 11 of the Interpretation Act, the existing legal framework will continue to be in place until such time as the new legal framework in its entirety is in place. So that's my understanding, is that should the president not attempt either 8th of December, the existing system of NPRPA and the EMP process would be continued to be applied until such time as those provisions are attempted to. But maybe the lawyer can help with the legal opinion.
Yeah. But while you're responding, that you should also ask Alia Wafi as to whether the old act won't have an impact on the one environmental system in the absence of the absence of the amendment, and therefore using the current legislation. Won't the current legislation then have an impact, negative impact, on this one environmental system in the absence of the amendment?
In terms of the amendments, there are certain amendments that are required in terms of the NPRPA Act in order for the one environmental system to work. But as Mr. Wald indicated, that if that doesn't happen, essentially in terms of the interpretation, I would refer to the previous legislation. We'd obviously not be able to implement the one environmental system yet. So we are not yet until it's accepted.
Not quite.
That's what I want to hear with all due respect. This is the crux of the matter.
Yeah.
And we need, as a community, yeah, to know what is going on, because what is all the environmental system will be able to be implemented or what not.
Allow us to start with the implementation of the environmental system. One, of course, remember that the lawyers can update. We had a provision for an 18-month period for preparation of the plan wherein the Department of Mineral Resources are going to establish its own capacity to deal with the implementation of CIA in terms of the environmental legislation. And at the same time, also they still allow for the appeal office to be the Minister of Environmental Affairs. What then that act also did was to then say at a certain point there will be a whole fail transfer of the function. So the assumption is that there is no amendment in terms of the NPRPA that is with the president will then be appointed in time for us to then the waste licenses will not be issued because of the current amendments, so the whole management of the field and top high mining areas will still be managed in terms of the old NPRPA. So those are the kinds of difference in terms of the delay in the assumption of the NPRPA. But we can write all of such things. It's all legal. It's one clause here and another clause there. But I think that we can say fairly as the authorities, because we are also not 100% ready. I think that's the honest also in the comments. We are not 100% ready to listen to the system. The legislation, water access, we're having a need for water is enough. The regulations have just been, the draft regulations are in process to the minister. They have not yet had the public comments.
which in essence is going to mean that even their process might not then be the people who are in the system. So we are not 100% ready, but the progress, the working progress, which is being undertaken in anticipation of that one.
Can I allow, because we're running out of time, can I ask the department in their response, written response, that they expand with regard to these issues, this particular issue, so that members then are here, exactly what is going to be happening with regard to this particular issue. As we indicated that by next Friday, we should be receiving the written response on the question, but also the department should also expand and elaborate in terms of their responses. But also members are allowed to, between now and Friday, this Friday, can ask further questions, no questions that relate to the issues on the agenda. Because of time, I will allow in the department to the Department of Environmental Affairs to take us through on the DOCA amendment.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, while they are setting up for the next presentation, can you allow the one response to the one question about the competing blending and how division conflict, how we manage land management to transportation through the implementation of the of LUMA, which is the Special Land Use Management Act administered by the Department of World Development and then LUMA is.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. The LUMA is enacted as the 2013 Act, and currently the process of making the regulations for implementation is ongoing. And in the context with the Constitutional Court's deadline for final implementation of those regulations for the Act, it is important in this context, Chair, because of the two departments, and even if there are three departments, we are only dealing with three aspects that are actually contributing to land use patterns and spatial patterns of reform. And what actually informs three very important areas of the Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Act is an example that we have forwarded as the interdepartmental task team, which relates to Krisismeer that we've talked about today. Now, Krisismeer is not only important for us from biodiversity perspective, as the Department of Environmental Affairs is the prime drafter. It is also high-quality shallow coal that makes it a high-priority area identified by the Department of Mineral Resources as a priority resource area. It is also an important freshwater factory, so it is indicated by the Department of Water and Sanitation as a key water resource section, and it is of the highest potential agricultural land with highest productivity as well as a high rainfall in the country. So both in terms of four national priorities, the same geographical space is identified as important for all of them. And none of these priorities in terms of the Constitution is a higher priority than any one of the other ones. So what SLUMA has done in terms of Section 9 of the Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Act, it provided a system of norms and standards to do a trade-off and a prioritization amongst priorities. Because SLUMA says spatial planning at national, provincial, and regional level must reflect to all national priorities and must reflect it in a spatial form. And then in terms of Section 24, it says that land use planning zones, which are binding on land use, must be in accordance with the spatial development framework. So what Section 9 then builds in is then the mechanism that must still be developed, and I think that is why it's important that I raise it here, that because this committee is also the fairness committee for that act. that regulatory process to develop that conflict management mechanism and norms and standards at land use zoning level, not at land development level, so not individual application, but at the zonation level, be actually resolved in the current priority regulation process, because there are certain regulations that must be in place before the end of January, and if I understand the constitutional ruling correct. So I think it's important that we also take this process towards that independent process that we have to play a referee over all the different departments that have an individual priority around zonation and then ultimately land use. Thanks.
Thank you very much. But I think we'll have to follow up this issue maybe in the next committee meeting. Also has also invited the Department of Rural Development and Reform. Can I ask that we have a 5 minute break and record the other aspects? Okay. 5 minutes.
Ons laat eers die, daar is die veel wees zodra die conveyere gebouw is. En mens kan nou weisig in die is. Ja, en conveyere is nog niet van.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, and good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present to you. Honourable Chair, as discussed very briefly now, and I take my guidance from you, it may be useful just to do a short introductory presentation that contextualizes the amendments to the Kyoto Protocol in the negotiations that have taken place since Durban in 2011. all the way up to where we are going in COP20 in Lima, which is at the end of this year. So may I go ahead with this? Very short. Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. So then just in terms of how the United Nations Framework Convention deals with climate change, it recognises the common global responsibility to deal with what is a global challenge. It also recognises that countries have contributed differently to the global climate change challenge and also have unique national circumstances and unique capability to contribute to the global solution. And so the convention outlines what are the common obligations of all countries, and then it goes further than that and adds specific obligations to be undertaken by developed countries which have been polluting, have a greater historical responsibility for greenhouse gas emissions over the period of time. And these additional specific obligations were elaborated in the Kyoto Protocol, which was negotiated in 1997 and which came into force in 2005. And the Kyoto Protocol creates the binding obligations on developed countries, on industrialized countries, which are referred to as the Annex I parties in the convention. And they have to reduce greenhouse gases during specifically defined commitment periods. The first commitment period took place from 2008 and came to an end in 2012. Now, this means that there has to be a decision taken on what to do, whether to go forward with a second commitment period or what the alternative options were. Now, this was just at a very difficult time of the Durban COP 17 Conference of the Parties, 17th Conference of the Parties in 2011, which under South Africa's COP presidency, a very unique global agreement was negotiated, which focused firstly on the urgency of implementation from now up to 2020, and this included the second commitment period under the Kyoto Protocol for those developed countries that were willing to join the second commitment period, as well as comparable quantified emission reduction commitments. In other words, there had to be comparability between those developed countries that were under the second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol and those that were not, and nationally appropriate mitigation by developing countries. And of course, there was also an agreement at COP17 in Durban in 2011 to negotiate a future legal system beyond 2020. And that is the negotiation that we're currently involved in. And that's been a four-year negotiating process, well, 3 years so far, with the final year next year. And we're all on our way. Well, the South African delegation is on its way this week to Lima, to COP20, which is a really critical conference of the parties as we get closer to COP21, which is in Paris next year, and the conclusion of these negotiations. There was also agreement in the Durban COP17 outcome to increase ambition pre-2020. That means that there has to be specific action and commitment to make sure that there is sufficient mitigation or sufficient emission reduction efforts to take us safely from the post into the post-2020 period. And these issues for the future and the issues of ambition are negotiated under the Durban platform. So the key thing, now just going back to the Kyoto Protocol, was that COP17 agreed that all the Kyoto Protocol multilateral rules governing the legal obligations for developed countries must be continued for a second commitment period, beginning in 2013 and ending in 2020. And it further agreed that the draft amendments of the Security Protocol needed to be forwarded to COP18 in Doha for finalization and for adoption in 2012 as the Doha amendment to the Kyoto Protocol. So this slide just gives you the progression from COP17 through to COP18 through to COP19. And there under COP17 in Durban, you can see the second commission period under the Kyoto Protocol was agreed. It was a political agreement. There was the agreement of the four-year negotiation of a new agreement to be adopted in 2020. And of course, that required a working group on the BIM platform to deal with this negotiation. COP18, we adopted the amendment, we confirmed the multi-year plan of work to conclude negotiations on the 2015 legal agreement. COP19, good progress was made on the Kyoto Protocol accounting rule for the second commission period, and there were a series of other outcomes in COP19, and that brings us into COP20, which is the COP that's taking place starting from Monday next week. Now, in terms of ratification of the Kyoto Protocol amendment, the question often asked, why should South Africa be ratifying the Kyoto Protocol amendment when we're a developing country? Well, South Africa is a party to both the convention and the protocol. And South Africa has a very direct interest in a robust, multilateral, fair and effective and rules-based international legal regime to address the global climate change challenge. And there's a certain set of rules in the Kyoto Protocol which govern the entering into force of any amendment to the Kyoto Protocol. And that rule requires that an instrument of acceptance needs to be submitted by at least three quarters of the parties to the Kyoto Protocol. So that means that we, as a developing country, have a particular interest in ensuring that as many countries as possible ratify the amendment to ensure that the amendment is executed for. And I think it is important to emphasize that the ratification places no legal obligation on developing countries such as South Africa. It confirms the legal obligations of developed country parties out of the second commitment period. Just the last two slides then give an overview of the key issues that are relevant to the negotiations in the next 2 weeks. The critical issue is that we need agreements on elements and the legal form for the multilateral, the 2015 legal agreement. So the negotiations in the last year, certainly this year, have been focusing on what the various elements, what would be the structure, the outline of this new 2015 legal agreement. And the key thing about the 2015 legal agreement is that it's inclusive of all parties. So this new 2015 new legal agreement would be applicable to developed and developing countries. And from a South African perspective, it needs to deal with all the elements of the negotiation, including mitigation, adaptation, technology, finance, and capacity building. A very key issue for COP20 is a decision on what is referred to the intended nationally determined contributions. Now, these nationally determined contributions are effectively what countries are pledging to contribute to the global process of responding to climate change. Now, this, from a South African perspective, means both the emission reduction contributions and the adaptation contributions. The critical thing for the meeting in Lima at the end of this year is to get agreement on not only the minimum information that parties must submit as they submit their nationally determined contributions, but also the process for submission of these nationally determined contributions and the process for assessment of those contributions. A third very critical issue for Lima is this question of giving effect to the principle of common but differentiated responsibility and, and equity for some. The South African perspective, the new global legal agreement must be fair, it must be effective, and there's a whole question around how, with evolving emissions, greenhouse gas emissions from countries such as China, India, of course, Brazil, and of course South Africa is one of those countries, how do we now constitute the question of common but differentiated responsibility that acknowledges that there is two annexes within the United Nations Framework Convention, one that is non-annex one countries, the developing countries, and one that is annex one countries, the developed countries, but also acknowledges that globally there is a change in terms of greenhouse gas emissions by developing countries. And then finally, the whole question of dealing with urgency, and the need for support, financial, technology, and capacity building support to developing countries to enable them to respond to the impact of climate change that, as we have seen, globally are already taking place. So South Africa's expectations of the 2015 agreements, Honourable Chair, this is a list of the real bottom line principles that for South Africa are really critical. Such the 2015 agreement must reinforce the multilateral rules-based system of the United Nations. This is a reflection of the fact that climate change is a global problem. It requires a global solution, which is a multilateral solution. It must contribute to the objectives of the convention set out in Article 2. It must be inclusive, as we said, applicable to all parties. It must be fair. It must therefore give effect to the principles of equity and common but differentiated responsibility. It must be effective. And this means that it must be based on sound science and adequate to meet what is the global temperature agreement or the global temperature goal, that there should not be more than a 2 degree temperature increase. Finally, it must enable and enhance the transition to low emission and climate resilient standard development pathway. And critical for Africa is it must give equal priority to adaptation. This is very critical because there has been, from developed country perspective, there is an emphasis on the emission reduction effort, but from an African perspective, where we are really dealing with increased extreme events and likelihood of a 4 to 6 degree temperature increase in parts of the African continent, it's absolutely critical that the new global agreement locates adaptation equally. So that's a bit of a run-through from COP17 all the way through to COP20, and it locates the amendment to the Kyoto Protocol in that context. And I think, then, Chair, again, I'd ask your guidance as to whether you'd like me to go forward and then go through the Doha amendment in more detail, or whether I've sufficiently covered it.
Can I also get guidance from the Never. Is it enough? Okay. Maybe what we should do, because we received the question of time, we'll be combining what is the presentation also with the new presentation. But we also request that we also be forwarded the presentation, because talking about the design gives the background from Pepe to now Ujima. Can I allow the member to ask questions, but also refer to the question put in the presentation that they have to support the presentation? Can I take him there?
Thank you,
Chair. Yes.
I'll have no further questions. I would just ask for the committee, if it's okay with the Chair and the rest of the committee, to get the feedback when you're coming back from this spot, and to see and summarize what if our expectations have been met in to what extent, and the implications for us in South Africa to the committee.
Thank
you.
Any other questions? Then in terms of the process, we supposed to take the recommendation as this committee. First, we need to agree to the amendment and then take the process to the National Council of Provinces. And we first should do that by agreeing. So we will therefore need a mover and a second. Let me first read the resolution of the committee. Says the report of the Select Committee on Land and Mineral Resources on the acceptance of the Doha Amendment to the Kyoto Protocol to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, dated 25th November 2014. The Select Committee, having considered the request for approval by Parliament of the acceptance of the Doha, referred to it. To recommend that the Council, in terms of Section 231(2) of the Constitution, approve the said agreement. So, Honorable Prince, second. Honorable Mango. Thank you very much for the presentation. As was indicated by members, at the next select committee meeting, they would like to have a feedback before go to Paris for the 21st one. Thank you very much for the presentation.
I don't know if there's any last now.
Well, I don't know whether I should invite you to lie. But one of the members, I suggest that you should use, and then we have to convince that for the adoption of the oversight visit report, and then we done. Thank you very much. Okay.
Now we are going to deal with the oversight is the report. The honorable members, you remember that we undertook oversight visit to the Gauteng province, visiting the Geoscience Council, the Agriculture Research Council, the ONDEF. And we also visited the public enterprise entities, the South African Airways, the South African Express, Ginair, and Transnet. So the Secretariat has consolidated the report of the visit that has been sent to all honorable members. All that we are requesting now is for all our members, having gone through the report, to adopt the report, including the recommendations that we also made during our visit. Can we have a
reporting? We read through it.
Okay. Can I take then this opportunity on behalf of the chairperson that we have been acting? Okay, honorable.
Chairperson, I wanted when this happened to just congratulate the secretary because it was so well consolidated. You know, I was expecting a long report and it was so well put together. I wanted to do that, you know, formally and say it was amazingly done. Thank you.
We don't have power to give them bonus. Otherwise, we would get, yeah.
let's thank honourable members as behalf of the chairperson that since we started in June, I think our first meeting was in June from the speaker. After we were sent, we conducted ourselves very well. We debated issues. We called the executive to account, the committee. Even though some situation, there are ministers that we have not seen in this committee. I have spoken to some of the informal complaints that we've never seen them in the select committee. But also there are always apologies even with those that have been before this committee. I am also in my capacity as an action program whip. We have been informed that we should at least for next year develop a program that goes up until the June next year. But also the executive was complaining that the way we do program in Parliament, we do it on a 2 month or 2 week basis. So it affects their planning. So if we send the program, we say no upfront in terms of the department, which department will be seeing when, what are the issues, if they can know that in each month happens in June. And so by some around March or so, we will also develop another program for up to November 2015, so that they don't complain and say we are the ones who are making it impossible for them to come and account. So let me thank the members for their attendance and their participation in the select committee meeting. There are issues that honourable members, I think we need to follow up. There are issues that communities and stakeholders are very much concerned or interested in. This issue of the fracking in particular, I think it's a matter that we must take up as a committee. Because if the department go on with the fracking, and in the later phase there are problems, we will also be accused as a select committee that we just rubber stamp the issues that come from the department without thoroughly examining them. So it's one issue that I think of all the other issues that have been reported, there are not any others that are not important. But this one, you can see the interest shown by the media, by the interested parties, that this is an issue that is of a concern to the community. So I think we should be very, very thorough in terms of oversighting this process. We should not just understand it. We should express concern where, especially with things like rushing through the issues such as the regulation issue, not of permit. But that goes to also other issues, your land claims and all that. Those are the issues. They are issues that are emotional issues, issues that are concerned, issues that are very can boil your blood, you know, things like that. So those issues, we really need to be thorough in terms of our work, in terms of the oversight. So that is an indicator that we should not also be accused of that being a conveyor belt of decision of the election. We must be thorough so that in the long run we are really not accused. We must do our work properly. Even if it means we must be some of these processes. I think we also need to hear, we should not only hear the views of the department, we need to hear the views of the stakeholders, the communities. I was indicating to the sector that maybe we should even have a public dialogue on some of these issues or even seminars so that we hear the views of other stakeholders. We should also have the oversight visit in these areas that are affected, the protected areas, and all others, particularly in the case of fracking. But I'm saying we will also undertake oversight in other departments as well. But I think for me, this should be the priority, the issue of production. I should also, if possible, include a study so that we have international comparison, so that issues that are being raised in the country by the concerned groups, we have to find out how those issues were dealt with in countries where fracking is taking place. We also would like to thank you very much for the participation and attendance. We hope to see each other next year. I would like to suggest also that the Senator Rivers give us the program for next year now. I know it's going to be part of the overall NGOP program. At least this committee must know what issues that we will be dealing with next year. So that members, if they feel that there are issues in each of the departments that we oversight, they feel that we should include, we should do that now so that they get included in the program of our committee. I'd like to thank members, thank the support staff, but also emphasize. We thank also members of staff, we thank our guests. I also interested on some of the issues that we deal with in this committee. You can access us as members if you have concerns, you can as individuals. Meet with us, email us, phone us on the issue that you are concerned about. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you to you and the leadership you're providing and the way you're conducting and the fact that we are can engage with the department and that we are free to ask questions and raise as many questions we would like. Thank you for that.